give that shit up, you're going to concentrate on golf.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
You play ball like a girl!
Welcome to this week's edition of a Roy Orbison Tattoo Podcast with me, Colm, and my co-hosts, Bossy and Paul. This is the coaching podcast with a difference. We watch a movie, it might help if you watch it too, we get a special guest on, and we discuss the coaching from the movie and how it relates to our own experiences. So whether you're in the car, out for a run or a walk, or just using us to cancel out the noise from the kids in the background, we hope you enjoy.
So welcome, Paul and Massey, as always.
Hey lads, how are you getting on?
And welcome to David Baird from Scottish FA. Welcome, David. So you might just give us a quick background on your coaching journey so far, David, and what got you to the place you are today.
Yeah, I've been coaching for about 16 years, and I just love the game, so I'm never precious about kind of who I'm coaching. You know, I've got a lot of experience in the grassroots game, a lot of experience in, you know, semi-professional adults, walking football. I have a big remit just now in girls and women's football, trying to grow the female pathway here in Scotland. I've got a project running in primary schools, so I like to, as cheesy as it sounds, I like to try and bring the joy of football to as many people as possible. I don't really have an ambition of, I want to go and work on this aspect of the game or this aspect in the game. Sometimes I feel as if people that are maybe that way inclined, they close themselves to a lot of good opportunities because the people you meet from 1 minute doing, you know, walking football with older men and women and hearing about some of their stories about players back in their day to then going and working with a primary one class that are just full of energy and enthusiasm and fun. So yeah, I've got quite a lot going on at the moment. I'm lucky enough that through being open-minded and having a passion for the game and trying to do as many experiences as I can, that, you know, I've coached in the Middle East. I spent a year or so in Dubai, spent 4 or 5 years in America, and really enjoying my right now as a qualified coach educator with the Scottish FA. Also the girls and women's development officer, as I mentioned.
Very good. And I suppose one of the things that where I suppose I came across you was your scoreboard soccer. Do you want to just talk about that for a second to give people a background? Because like there's some excellent content there, and like I shared a bit of it there recently on Twitter for coaches in the GA, and there seems to be a kind of an appetite for it. But do you want to just go through, I suppose, your thinking behind it all and how it got to where it is?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head with there being an appetite for it, because that really kind of blew me away. So, as I say, I spend loads of time working with loads of different ages and ability levels. And, you know, this method of coaching is just something I've did for probably 5 or 6 years now. Being at the coalface and being out there with particularly young kids, you have a lot of trial and error of what works, what doesn't, what they enjoy, what they engage in, you know, what knocks down the barriers in regards to some players are, you know, very good and some players are maybe new to the game, and how do you accommodate that within a session? So anyway, and I feel bad almost saying this because I know the last couple of years has been very challenging for a lot of people, but lockdown and going on furlough gave me the platform. You know, I was going crazy because I couldn't go out and physically coach. It gave me the platform to use things like Zoom to share these ideas. Like, you know, these are some of the games that I play. And all of a sudden people are saying, what do you call these games? I didn't have a name for it. I just, you know, had to come up with scoreboard soccer. And, you know, where do you access these games? I've worked quite hard to put together a website and a mobile app just to show the games. I've been really, you know, walks of life that I never thought the games could be used in. You're mentioning GA there and hockey and handball and, you know, coaches from disability sessions and walking football sessions saying that they're using scoreboard soccer. So from what's a really simple concept, and for anyone listening that's not familiar with the concept, I'm always happy to share and send resources over. Essentially, a lot of governing bodies, the Scottish Football Association, English Football Association, they're saying, like, kids need to play more football, you know, never mind all the drills and the practices. They need to play more of the game to replicate almost like street football of years gone by. And I totally agree with that. Playing the game brings loads and loads of benefits, but also brings a couple of barriers. You know, that young player that can get the ball and dribble by everybody and score, for example, those younger boys and girls that are a wee bit disengaged, you know, that are apprehensive about getting the ball because of their skill level. So all scoreboard soccer is, play games of football, but put a fun activity next to the pitch that works as the scoreboard. So when David gets the ball and dribbles by everyone and scores, you're saying, well done, come over and try and beat the goalie for a bonus point. David gets to go and work on, you know, shooting the ball, but the ball gets shared by the other players because that player who was dominating the ball, there's a wee kind of hidden, you know, coach's trick just to get him or her off the pitch momentarily. So unfortunately, what I see is a coach educator, contrary to the approach that I've just described, coaches will actually stifle that young, talented player by saying, you need to play two touch, or you must pass the ball, or you're not allowed to score because you keep scoring. So the player that could be the next, you know, Johan Cruyff or George Best, you're actually making them worse. So that's a couple of things. It's evolved over, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, and you know, I could go on, but it's the idea as well that all these players are developing at different rates. So what you might praise Paul for would be different to what you praise David for. You know, if you've been working on Susan to pass the ball a little bit more, regardless of whether her passes are successful or not, you praise the fact that she tried to pass the ball through this fun scoreboard, and then she's more motivated to repeat it because that's how you win the game. And as we know as coaches, practice makes perfect. You know, if I can tell you from experience, the second I say, Rebecca, well done for communicating, come over to the scoreboard, all your players are now trying to communicate because that's how you win the game. You do these things that result in a reward, and yeah, happy to share the content, but it's just about trying to design fun little games that work as a scoreboard alongside your actual games. And we've had some crazy ones. All the best ones have been designed by kids as well. They love that engagement factor where you ask them to design the scoreboard. So we've had kids bring along their favourite board game. We've had water balloon challenges. We've had dress the mannequin. We've had all sorts of stuff, like really, really engaging stuff, which probably hard to do justice over a kind of podcast like this. But as I say, happy to share any of the ideas.
When you say bring your favourite board game, what was the context of that?
Yeah, I'll give you an example of some board games that we use as scoreboard soccer. So, you know, let's say we have loads of kids and we set up 4 pitches of 3v3, 4v4, whatever the numbers are. We have a red team out there, a green team out there, a yellow team out there, a black team out there in their bibs, sitting right in the middle. And between the 4 pitches will be a game of snakes and ladders with a red marker, a black marker, a blue marker, you know, a marker that represents all the teams. So when they score, they would run over, they would roll the dice, and they would go up the pitch. So you can't get complacent or, you know, think that you're scrolling a game or you're doing rubbish in a game because someone in another pitch might be going further up the board game, if that kind of makes sense. So every time you score, you go over, you roll the dice, you move your marker up. I'm really big in scoreboard soccer. You know, you say to the kids, is it just about goal scoring? And they'll say, no, you know, well, what else is good that we can do on the soccer pitch? Or we can pass and move and tackle and, you know, encourage each other. And you just say, great, if I say any of that on any of the 4 pitches, I might just say, right, Colin, fantastic, go over to the snakes and ladders. So that's one that we've did quite a lot, the snakes and ladders. And it sounds crazy, but, you know, with kids, it's absolute joy when they hit a ladder and just sheer elation when they hit a snake. You know, it's just this, if a game of snakes and ladders is what engages them to try and work hard on the pitch because they want to go over and roll a dice, then why not? I'll give you a quick example of another one that we've had. You know, the old game kind of guess who. So the red team will have a board behind their goal. The blue team will have a board behind their goal. And as the coach, I'll pick one of the characters. And then when one team scores, you say, right, Sarah, come over. And Sarah will say, you know, do they have red hair? And you're like, nah, they don't have red hair. And they'll go and flip it down. And so the more positive behaviours, I keep referencing goal scoring, but as I say, we don't just praise goal scoring. The more positive behaviours, the more chances you get to ask the coach, the more opportunity to find out what character the coach is holding. So just, yeah, to have things like that. We've had buckaroo as well. You know, the more you go over, the more chance you have of the donkey kicking its legs and whoever makes it do that wins. So we've had loads of board games that the kids have brought along.
Brilliant, yeah. I actually tried two of the games last week with a bunch of 14 or 15 year olds. So the one you shared a few weeks ago, David, with you start with no goalkeeper, and when you score, you become a goalkeeper. So you could end up with all the first team to end up with all your players as the goalkeepers. So you had 5 goalkeepers, lads versus whatever, are winners. And I played the 2 rounds of it, and the best player on the pitch, obviously, first player to score in the first game. Yeah. And fuck it, he was waiting around for about 8 minutes for the game to finish, you know, standing in goals and saving him and blah, blah, blah. And I pulled up the second game and said, right, lads, we're going to do that again. Quick team talk, come up with your tactics. And they had a chat themselves and they decided, now there was one particularly very weak kid. He's kind of a new player to hurling. And they said, right, we're going to make sure he's the first player to score. Yeah. So they spent about 3 minutes trying to get this player to score. Now they gave him so many opportunities, but eventually he got it. He was delighted because it was probably the first time he scored in a couple of sessions. But then the game kind of worked away then, you know, they kind of tried to keep the good fella to be the last player. So for him, who I've seen just go up and down the length of the pitch, no problem, just breezes past players, gets to score. All of a sudden, he had to start passing the ball and had to start working with his teammates, you know.
100%. And I love that that's the experience you've had, because that's 100% why it was designed. So, I mean, I design stuff on pen and paper, but then I don't share it on social media until I've delivered it. And I know I got some success and I share it. Now, success is not always success, because the outcome you might look for is a bit of, you know, failure or resilience or grit. But that particular game, and this might come on to the discussion we're going to talk about a little bit later on, but my book that's out at the moment, it's all about designing environments, just because this is what works for me and this is a wee bit of my experience and my background. I know I shared some of my coaching and football experience earlier, but like many coaches out there, I've had full-time jobs and some of the stuff I've learned in the real world really ties in. So anyway, that's what I'm really big on. I don't get a lot of success with instruction. I don't think young players like being told what to do. I don't think they like being called out when they do something wrong, especially when they're fully aware they know it wrong. So when I'm sitting there and I'm working with a particular group and I have the young lad, Robert, who can just dribble by everyone and score, and I do think he maybe holds the ball a little bit too long, and I see coaches as a coach educator that screaming ball, pass, 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 thinking that they have this magic voice that all of a sudden the kid's going to know how to pass just because I shout pass. You know, you might as well shout, you know, put it in the top corner from the halfway line. I don't know if it works, you know, telling them what to do. So that's where that session design came from, right? When you score a goal, you go in goals, and the first team to get everyone in goals wins. And I had the same experience as yourself. That young player, after a couple of games of that, realised, well, I'm going to try and assist everyone else because I'm the best player. I have the ability to do so, to try and put it on a plate for other ones, and then I'll score the winning goal. And that's the environment I created to try and get them to realise the pass as opposed to me to tell them to do it. And I use the example a lot in my coach education, you know, Zoom calls. You know, these young kids, they don't go to school when the teacher just says, you know, 50 take away 10 is 40. Now you know that there's no fun there. There's no engagement. There's no working it out. And there's no ownership of the learning. You know, you give them a problem and they try and work it out. So you give them, if you have 50 pence and you spend 10 pence on a chocolate bar, how much do you have? And they move around the plastic coins and they have the ownership of the learning in that environment. And they get excited to tell you the answers because they've problem solved, they've worked it out. Teacher knows the answer all along. The teacher's not genuinely wondering what the answer is. They know. So I'm really glad you had that experience where we create the environment and then we get the behaviours we want from them. And it probably ties in quite well if I can upsell my book a little bit, because that particular game, you know, that isn't a scoreboard soccer game. There's no scoreboard on the side of the pitch. That's just another environment. So as much as my book's called Scoreboard Soccer and there's loads of scoreboard soccer games in there, it's full of other practices and games and session plans and curriculums as well.
So I suppose something that's gripping the world at the moment is Wordle. And so, like, there's a set amount of parameters as well of how you play the game, but everyone plays the game differently and picks different words and goes about it in a different manner. And I suppose that comes exactly, it's what you're thinking about, it's what I'm thinking about as you're talking, that environment you set and how people kind of learn and go about the task a little bit differently. And that's, I suppose, if you are producing games that allow that bit of exploration from the players, then they're really good games. That is, there's not one simple way of scoring or whatever, or being successful.
Yeah, and you know, it's not as if I never give instruction or information or guide players, but I really like to try and set the environment first to see what comes out in that and see what information they actually need. And I've been as guilty of this as anyone, and there's still a place for this. But sometimes I think we need to get a wee bit away of right, I've got 10 kids and they're all 12 years old and I've got them for an hour and a half. I'm going to plan a session full of predetermined ideas of what they're going to need to hear. You know, so we're going to pass with the inside of our foot and we're going to do this. And it's like, well, four kids can do that. Three of them aren't ready for that. And two of them did that last week at a different program. So I try and set the environment where, you know, particularly when it's teams and groups that I'm guest sessioning on or only working with the first time, I need to see what they can do before I design what they actually need. You know, I need to see how far they can take themselves. So if I do a session and the ultimate outcome I want is like, you know, a good first touch, I'll design the environment so they get the opportunity to do that loads and loads and loads and loads. And then if someone, you know, tries to control the ball with the sole of their foot and it rolls underneath it, if I want to look like Pep Guardiola in front of the parents, you know, I'll freeze, okay, and I'll come in, use the inside of your foot and control the middle of the ball, and I'll over-instruct and I'll coach the kid who probably knows that they've made a mistake. But what I'll do is I'll let the environment just continue and I'll see if they work it out. If they make the mistake again, fine. If they make the mistake again, fine. Next time, if it comes and they use the inside of the foot, so control the middle of the ball, then like I was saying about the primary school teacher example, they've had ownership of that learning. They've worked that out. It's just like the story we heard about the kid who realised, well, if I always score the first goal, I'm in goals for 8 or 9 minutes. They've worked that out. But if the mistake persists for 4, 5, 6 times, my environment has allowed me to identify, you know, this player maybe needs a coaching point now. You know, I'll bring them to the side and I'll support them, maybe use a bit of guided discovery. So the thing I'm really, really big on is environment, so they can try and problem solve. But also as a coach, I'm constantly observing to see, well, actually, where's the limitations and where can I actually help them?
A lot of us tried and error then as well. I presume you've come up with games that haven't worked straight away or haven't worked and you just have to change them, tweak them slightly and to make it more appealing to the children and the participants, but also their learning outcomes.
Yeah, you talk about games that haven't worked and I'll tie into the idea of scoreboards. You know, when the kids brought Jenga along as a scoreboard and, you know, every time you get praised and sent to the scoreboard, you go and do Jenga, but that didn't work because you don't want to go to the scoreboard because the more you're overplaying Jenga, the more you've gone at them. Yeah. So, you know, they think we're doing a fun scoreboard game and you're actually getting punished for scoring goals, making good passes, taking players on. So, we found out quite quickly that, you know, now if you get praised, you can say to someone in the other team, go to the scoreboard. Loads of it's been trial and error. And in scoreboard soccer in particular, I've did it for so long that I've probably, if it's okay to say, I've probably found that there's so many benefits to it. I think it really works with certain groups. Of course, it's not going to work with everyone.
Brilliant.
Very good. I suppose we'd better get talking about the movie, seeing as it is the main concept of the show. Do you want to tell us what you picked and why you picked it?
Yeah, the movie I picked was Mary Poppins. The more recent one is The Return of Mary Poppins. And I'll need to go back and watch it again because I remember really, really enjoying it at the time. But yeah, when I was tasked with, you know, pick a movie that, you know, resonated with you as a coach or there's some lessons to learn from it, for me and my beliefs and my values as a coach, that honestly came to mind straight away because we've spoke quite a bit at length about, you know, that environment. You know the behaviours you want your players. And I'm guilty of always referencing kids, but, you know, I work a lot with them. You know, adult players and this kind of stuff. But anyway, you know the behaviours you want. Now how do you design the design so kids want to do it and they want to engage in it and they want to learn and they want to have fun? So when Mary Poppins wants the children to tidy the room, it's not that instruction environment of go and tidy your room. You need to tidy your room, you know, go and do it. It's, you know, it's a song and it's a dance, and it's a game and, you know, it's a race to put away all the toys, whatever it might be. And I just thought, yeah, that's it. And it ties into what we spoke about. I know what I want to achieve. How do I make that fun and engaging and something that they're genuinely going to want to do?
It does work. Like, it does work even real practical life. Like, my own children, if you ask them to tidy up, not going to happen. But if you make some sort of game out of it or make it slightly competitive even, it's like, yeah, done nearly straight away. And you can sit up with the feet up and all. It's great. But, it's definitely trying to incorporate the fun factor into doing events, and it's same when you come to training sessions. It's brilliant.
Yeah, so it's like you know, what is it you want? So hard work, a bit of responsibility, you want them to tidy the room and you design the environment of how you get that. And again, not to harp on about it too much, but a big part of the scoreboard soccer design is, of course, we want to praise passing, dribbling and shooting and creativity. But, you know, it's an environment as well that we want to see resilience, respect, communication, teamwork, because all it does is call out good behaviours. But it can also highlight bad behaviours. So go over and take a point off your team scoreboard. You know, we don't use that kind of language here. And, you know, if somebody has a shot and Declan says, why didn't you pass to me? That was a rubbish shot. Well, hold on, Declan. Like, what could you have said to get a point on the scoreboard? Oh, unlucky. Better luck next time. Lift your head. And you can actually help your teammates. And this is, again, something that I've been really blown away by, you know, some of the response to people in education, for example, in different walks of the media saying, we need this now, like maybe more than ever. When you look at things like homophobia and Black Lives Matter and some of the really poor behaviours in society out there, can sport be a vehicle, and a lot of good people, can sport be a vehicle to not just train passing, dribbling and shooting, but train things like sportsmanship, teamwork, resilience, collaboration, and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I really see a lot of, you know, the Mary Poppins stuff and what I do. You know, I want to design a practice where I had a kid come up to me the other day in scoreboard soccer. So if I can picture a typical scoreboard soccer, I've got two games of five-a-sides going, and in the middle, we're just doing the basic volcanoes versus spaceship ones, you know. So two of the teams are volcanoes, two of the teams are spaceships. When you get sent to the scoreboard, one team's trying to get all the cones upside down, when the teams are trying to get all the coins the right way. So there's my environment, kind of taking the parallels from Mary Poppins. That's my fun game to try and get them to do what I want them to do. I turned to one of the pitches and I said something like, oh, that was a great pass. That's exactly what we've been working on. Come to the scoreboard. And this player runs over the scoreboard. So I momentarily took my eye off the other pitch. And one of the young boys on the other pitch came over and said, I think the kid's name was Terry, said, oh, Terry just made a great tackle. I think he should be sent to the scoreboard. Terry wasn't even in that kid's team, you know? So that's a kid who's actually recognised positive behaviours from the other team and then had the confidence and the character and, you know, to come and approach a coach that he doesn't know. It was just me in a school, you know, doing a guest session. Then, and that's the kind of stuff that, so I'm not sure if you can see the parallels from Mary Poppins, but it does really resonate with me how making things fun can really, really engage the kids. And the fact that she's just a great role model, isn't she? You know, she's everything that kids want. You know, enthusiasm, fun, imagination. Yeah, challenges as well. Like, if I remember the movie, you know, there's things that happen that Mary Poppins doesn't just, like, use her magic to solve. You know, they get put into situations where, you know, they need to save the day, essentially, the moment when there's, like, you know, the cartoon fox or whatever it is kind of steals something and they need to go and try and do it. Like, Mary Poppins presents them with challenges that they need to overcome instead of just almost, you know, spoon-feeding them and doing everything for them. And that really, if it's okay to go on a wee bit of a tangent here, guys, sorry if I'm speaking.
Oh, you're good. Much.
But that really resonates with me as well, because as a coach educator, and I'll be guilty of this as well, the amount of times I go out there and I see, you know, a pitch lined with 50 cones just so the kids are 100% sure where the lines are, like, use one cone. And if they go over it, you say, but by the way, that's out of play. The other team are getting the ball. You know, they don't need to be so wrapped in cotton wool. You know, sometimes forget the bibs, just play. You know, it's you four against you four. You know, engage in the challenge of communicating, scanning, teamwork. And then don't moan when someone on another team asks for a pass and you pass it to them, because they're showing just a wee bit of, you know, game savvy and, you know, streetwise. That's fine. If you have 10 players and you know 5v5 is just going to be a washout because three of them are just quality players, play 3 against 7. Put the 3 best players against the 7 weaker players. And challenge those 3 and do those 7. So, yeah, again, to circle back to Mary Poppins, she presents them with challenges. She presents them with moral dilemmas as well, doesn't she? You know, they see the guy that's running the bank, you know, trying to repossess people's houses or whatever it might be. And again, they need to highlight that, no, that's wrong, you know? So I'll need to go back and watch it again. But I remember thinking, yeah, this is a lot to take for a coach, especially a coach of kids.
Yeah, and you know, like all you're talking about there, like she had imaginative games to get them to do X, Y, and Z, but she very much had high standards in terms of the outcome she wanted them to get from the games. Like, she knew what she wanted them to be able to do at the end, be that get away from the baddies or clean their room or whatever the case may be, right? But then she also had situations, as you talked about, them moral dilemmas. She had outcomes for them that were way beyond what was initially set out for them, like in terms of, yes, we're teaching them X, but a byproduct of teaching them X, they're getting Y and Z as well, you know. Yeah. And I thought that was something that was very good watching it. That,
yeah, I love that idea of the byproduct as well. So to dive a wee bit deeper into the environment that Scoreboard Soccer creates. So yeah, Mary Poppins creates an environment where they're tidy in the room, and the outcome that hits you in the face is the fact that the room's now tidy. You know, the toys are away and the books are on the bookshelf, but the hidden byproduct is, you know, they get a bit of responsibility, they get a bit of collaboration, they get a bit of teamwork because they're working together. They understand the responsibility and the importance of doing these things. The byproduct of Scoreboard Soccer is the kids think they're just playing a game and all their good behaviours are going to be called out. Effort, skill, creativity. But the byproduct as a coach is the second Paul goes over to the scoreboard thinking that he's just getting a wee bit of praise and he gets to work on, let's say it's a keepy uppy challenge or something, actually he's just out of position momentarily. So now what the kids need to navigate on the pitch is a 4v3 counter-attack, 4v3 overload. How do they take advantage of a 4v3? How do the team of three slow down that counter-attack, defend outnumbered, delay the attack until Paul can recovery run back? So these are all the things that I found with time working with my players. On the surface of things, they were mindfully trying to develop good habits and develop a good culture. Encourage each other, support each other, try your best, all these kind of things. But what they were actually getting better at as players were playing quicker when they're 4v3, slowing down the attack when they're 3v4, all these kind of things. Running over, and if the scoreboard was a crossbar challenge, for example, they didn't run over and take all day and line it up and all that. They knew they had to perform the skill quickly, strike the ball, turn, sprint, get back on the pitch because my team needs me. So yeah, it's a great point, that kind of idea of, you know, we know the outcomes we want to achieve, and this will bring all these different byproducts as well.
Good. One of the things, the main thing that I took out of the film was right at the very end where the father had the relationship with the children and he was a little bit strict and he didn't believe them, whatever it was. And then at the end of the whole scene where he got the house back, but the father said it was more or less as he didn't want in future, he wanted not to forget what it was like to be a child. And I think sometimes as coaches, if you're coaching children or teenagers, you forget what it was like to be them and what they're looking for out of a game or what they're looking out of a club or friendships or whatever it is. And I thought that was one big learning outcome from actually that film.
I totally agree, because I think that I still remember what it's like to be a child, and I think the scoreboards I've designed are quite good fun. Like the one of volcanoes and spaceships, I think that's good fun, but really that's been around for 10, 15 years, and of course there's still a place for it. But the kids have probably done it loads. So when I gave the ownership on the kids to design the scoreboards, they showed me what fun was, you know, and sometimes we're guilty of not giving them the voice. So the kids have came up with ones I wouldn't have thought of in a million years. You know, saying to the kids, right, any good scoreboard games, you know, because I gave them the wee challenge to go and design one and come back. Yeah, you know, we're going to play hangman. How are we doing that? And it was my team against your team. Both teams had a mannequin behind their goal and they had hat, scarf, sunglasses, goalie gloves and goalie jersey. And it was the first team to dress the other team's hangman. These kids were playing like it was a World Cup final because they wanted to run over and put sunglasses on a mannequin. I never would have thought of that in a million years. The egg and spoon race was another one as well. You know, they get the egg on the spoon and the ball and they dribble it through cones and they put it and the scoreboard, and as long as the egg doesn't fall off the spoon, they get that point. And I've got videos of all these games of kids playing them, and just that I've taken on my phone because I thought, like, brilliant. So yeah, like engaging them in designing it, you know, they'll show you what fun's all about. And yeah, you do forget what it's like being a kid, because this is another thing that dives a wee bit deeper into the book, because I want to take coaches on a journey where they're doing maybe some of the tried and tested scoreboards, you know, that I've designed and I know that work. We're then engaging the coaches to design scoreboards that they think will work and have fun doing that, and then let the kids do it. But it takes you on a whole journey of, well, who are we to identify good and bad behaviours? Why is it always a coach that has to call out good and bad behaviours? You know, so it's one thing for me to say, yeah, fantastic, Brian, come to the scoreboard. But I've started to use it quite a lot to try and develop some leadership and some communication. So I'll say, right, Brian, you're the captain of the blue team. Rebecca, you're the captain of the red team. And if you see someone in the other team do something well, send them to the scoreboard. And I've had feedback from kids, because I've did so much in this program, feedback from teachers, coaches, parents, kids, who've said, like, what a great feeling it is when someone in the other team says, by the way, that was some goal, you go to the scoreboard, you know? And then another wee thing that I've experimented with recently, and, you know, this might work with some groups, might not well, I've asked the kids to identify their own praise so they can choose when they go to the scoreboard. And what really came out from that one, which was interesting, was kids going to the scoreboard because they thought they did something well, and then other kids in the session challenging them. Like, that wasn't good enough to go to the scoreboard. What are you going over there for? And they need to develop a bit of character. Like, they need to be able to turn and say, what do you mean? Like, that was a fantastic pass. Of course I'm going to go to the scoreboard. So, no, totally. I can't remember what brought me onto that.
Remembering what it's like to be a child, then.
And David, in terms of that game where you get the kids to decide whether they go to the scoreboard or not, like, have you seen negative aspects to that in terms of how it's operated?
The only negative aspect that I really seen from it was the fact that I was present. I would have loved it if they were just playing without an adult influence, which maybe a lot of us did in the street. And because they kind of maybe looked to me to be the make the final decision. Like, someone wants to go to the scoreboard, someone's saying, like, I don't think that was good enough to go to the scoreboard. Like, you're just going because, like, your team need a point or whatever. And then when you're there, it's almost too awkward just to stand there quietly. And then you have to be, nah, I do think that was a good pass, like, on you go kind of stuff. That was only downside of something that was quite experimental. I've not really seen any downsides of the one where you do the captains and you let them recognise praise. That works. That works really, really well.
Yeah. Another thing for me that from the film that I thought was really, really strong. So Mary Poppins is this person who arrives and disappears at different stages, and it's very much she arrives at the time when her help is needed, and then she disappears when she's no longer needed anymore. And I've really felt that it was something that's really important for a coach. So coaches, by their nature, they want to be involved and they want to help everyone all of the time. Mm-hmm. But knowing when to help and when to step back and allow people to just let be it kids or whatever, to look after themselves, that's a skill too. And I thought it was a skill that Mary Poppins had that a lot of coaches can kind of learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. I probably hadn't thought of that angle myself, but, you know, I totally agree with it. Like, as coaches, depending on the nature of how you coach, there's some people that coach just because, like, their son or daughter plays on a team and they'll always take them through the age groups. But I've had quite a lot of programs where, like, you're actually just trying to prepare them for, like, what comes next, for that transition into high school, or when they move up to the senior team, or, you know, whatever it might be. And I totally agree with you. Like, you're just trying to, you don't want them to become over reliant on you. And then, like, their mum or dad gets a job in, you know, a different town or a different city, and then they can only play football the way Coach David showed them, you know. But yeah, just when you're thinking of that, like, I had a player that I coached 3 or 4 years ago emailed me today asking for a job reference, and you're just like I love that. The fact that I would pop into their head is someone that they would want to give them a reference. So, you know, you've obviously kind of impacted their life when you see kids that you work with when you're younger on the street and they say hi, and, you know, that's what it's all about. It's not like trying to hang on to them. It's trying to get them to go and stand, you know, stand on their own two feet as best as they possibly can.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, and look, that's that boy product element of it.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that as well, like, you know, just trying to be there. There's a good quote, isn't there, that goes around social media every now and then about, like, be the coach that you needed, kind of thing, you know. And a big part of it for me is, like, you know, I'm sure we would all love to develop the next kind of Messi or Ronaldo, and I'm sure there's coaches more qualified and with more expertise than me that are trying to do that kind of thing. But I like to think about trying to develop a colleague. Would I want to sit next to this person in an office in 10 years? You know, do they have humility? Do they have communication skills? Do they have all these transferable skills from sport into the real world, if that's where they end up? Now, the strange thing for me is, I think that's made me a better coach, that realization. The investment in them as people, I think, has got more back from them as players. And that started to be a bit of a light bulb moment for me, because, you know, when you hear people talk about managers and coaches and teachers and educators they really, really respect, they're saying things like, you know, I would run through a brick wall for them. I'm pretty sure they don't show up on day one and think, I'm just going to run through a brick wall for this person. It's because of their engagement and their genuine interest in them as people that they give you more as players. You know, when you watch a documentary about Sir Alex Ferguson, they're not really saying his passing exercises were fantastic. I loved his shooting drills. You know, they're talking about him taking them out for dinner and getting to know the family and knowing the names of their kids, asking them how so-and-so is doing at school. And so when I had that realization that, you know, be there for them as people, I think that's when I got a little bit more back from them.
Very good. Was there anything else in the movie in particular that you like, Dave, that you take back to your coaching?
I'm not sure if I'm going to get this right, but I remembered thinking about one bit of it. Kind of referred back to the old movie, in that the tuppins that they put in the original Mary Poppins had now kind of amounted to quite a substantial sum of money, and that kind of saved them in the end, didn't it? And that really made me think about, you know, a fantastic book from an author, James Clear, Atomic Habits. I'm not sure if you guys have read it. Yeah. Such a good book that talks so much about tiny gains and you know, this idea that if you put one pence aside, like, every day, you're not going to consider yourself a millionaire. You know, you're not going to consider yourself rich by putting one pence to the side, but at some point you have to realize, I'm actually really wealthy now. And I really like that idea. The book's called Atomic Habits, and it's about how these small changes can actually amount to a big thing. And I've found that in a lot of my coaching practice, these small changes, like reward and respect, teamwork, you know, banging the drum about encouraging each other and sportsmanship and shaking referees' hands, tidying up changing rooms, these small things actually build into a much larger culture. So I remember, you know, thinking about that and saying, yeah, that resonates with me as well, that sometimes we don't appreciate how the small things are actually the big things. And because they would have thought, like, tuppins or whatever it was that they put in would never be the thing that actually one day, you know, saved the story as well. I guess the other thing as well, that the point that I was going to make, just having a wee think before I came on the call, was it's obviously a remake of an old film as well. And I was thinking about how, yeah, that relates to coaching, because, you know, we're all just taking other people's ideas and remaking it and adjusting it a wee bit. It's very hard to reinvent the wheel in coaching, because sometimes there's not a need for it. There's so many old and gold sessions out there that sometimes we need to go back to passing the ball off a wall, keepy uppies, you know, just letting them play 3v3s, 4v4s. So just taking something and putting a spin on it, just updating it, I think is a really good thing as well.
Good stuff.
Very good. Massey, Paul, any other takings away?
No, David covered it all and more there. Like, you mentioned stuff that just when you look back and reflect on it, you notice even more. Like, so yeah, no, it was good. It's a good way to keep the kids quiet and entertained for a few hours as well on a Sunday morning. But it's not a bad thing to watch.
Look, you know, I really like the element as well of just being childlike. Just it was very much a thread throughout with that. Everyone was childlike when dating with kids. And
it's a bit like you in a night out, Paul.
That's accurate enough. Yeah, thanks for bringing that to everyone's attention.
Yeah, like I said, I don't think it's as good as the original from my own watching. But like as I said, look, it's interesting that, you know, you're able to, you pulled so much, David, out of it yourself that, you know, you've kind of taken on board in your coaching journey. Like, so I think there's value in that for everybody. I think the thing that I thought about her was that just that she seemed to, everybody seemed to like her, you know, she built up really strong, positive relationships, you know. I think that was probably one of the things that stood out for me was, like, as a coach, you know, we're not all going to win the World Cup or win the county championship or win every match, but the relationships that you have and you can build that in 20 years' time, like you mentioned to David about the people that you want to sit beside in an office, but that you build positive, so many positive relationships that, you know, yeah, you won't remember how every match went, but you'll remember that person, you know. I think that's one of the important things out of the movie. Brilliant. So do you want to just give us where people can find you, David, and stuff like that, on Twitter and stuff, and just the book, the website, and you know, like you have the app as well, the stuff. Do you want to just give a quick update on all that stuff and where people can catch you and catch you on that stuff?
Yeah, so all my social media accounts, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram are all just at Coach David Baird. So just my name of Coach in front, at Coach David Baird. I've also got a book for sale just now, Scoreboard Soccer, you know, available from kind of Amazon and all kind of major retailers. And I love getting feedback on Scoreboard Soccer because in the scale of things, it is still new. I love seeing coaches' clips of scoreboards that they've designed because they're coming up with things so much better than me. So if anyone does try Scoreboard Soccer or wants to share an idea, I like them just to put hashtag Scoreboard Soccer in front of things and then I can find it. www.scoreboardsoccer.com has loads of scoreboard games and, you know, other things, 1v1s, passing drills, dribbling drills, full session plans, because Scoreboard Soccer is not the only kind of stuff that I design and share on there. And yeah, as you mentioned, there's also an app as well, app.scoreboardsoccer.com. If you type that into your phone's browser and save it to your apps, there's loads of content on there that hopefully your listeners will find useful.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we'll have to change it to the Scoreboard GA or something, or Scoreboard Gaelic for the Irish listeners. But yeah, look, as I said, it's very simple stuff. And as I said, for anyone not out there, just have a look at it because you'll definitely find something that you can take back to your coaching. So that's brilliant. Thanks very much for your time, David. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
We are into season 5 now, so thanks to everyone who has listened so far. We would be grateful if you would take the time to give us a retweet on Twitter or just share it with your friends. It would also be great if you give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It would mean a lot to us and we really appreciate it. Hope you all had a great week and we'll talk to you next year. See you next week, everybody.